okay with. I just want you to know I'm in charge of the consumer first.
Okay, we're good?
Yes.
Good evening, ladies and gentlemen. Welcome to the specially scheduled board meeting of February 23rd, 2010 for the San Luis Coastal Unified School District. Tonight we have a very important meeting. Not that they all are not important meetings. Because we're going to interview six folks who have been kind enough to apply to fill a vacancy of John Spadafore on the school board. And first, let me extend to those candidates who are here the board's gratitude and your willingness to come forward and volunteer. Hello, Mary Jo. And our plan for tonight is, according to our schedule, we're going to start with Mr. Taylor, Kent Taylor, followed by Catherine Shapiro, and then Scott Lathrop. We'll take a break at that time, about 10 minutes, and then finish up the interviews with Ellen Sheffer, Robert Schrage, sorry, I tried to memorize that, and Arlen Singwall. What we're going to do now is have a brief discussion with this.
Scheduled to occur at about 8:25. I'm wondering if there are members of the audience who came specifically for public comment and not for the interviews, if we want to move that opportunity.
That is an excellent question.
I will tell you that because this is a special meeting, you are obligated to take public comment only on this agenda item, not for other topics. If you want to move it to before your interviews, that's your prerogative.
Well, actually, I'd rather have it within the discussion, following the discussion by the board, probably before we take action. So, okay.
May I
I hope nobody was here specifically to speak on. Oh, good. Okay. Yes.
Sorry, this is just on the timing issue.
Mm-hmm.
I believe that what Kim and I discussed in terms of timing was 15 minutes per candidate, correct? And but the idea was, Mr. Millar, if you would be so kind, as to when the candidate comes in, to explain to them that overall they'll have 15 minutes to answer all of their questions. Kim will ask the questions. Mr. Robinette is serving as our timer, not to cut them off, but to just keep them apprised of how much time has gone by on each question. And he has nonverbal cues, as you can see, that he'll be giving them, and they can choose to ignore him and use all of their time for one question, but it would give them sort of a sense of how much time they have remaining.
Excellent. So I was being somewhat too generous. And so it's shooting for 15.
Right, because at 20 minutes, your next candidate should be in the chair and ready to begin. So that gives us a little cushion. And I will keep a second timer running to monitor the overall 20-minute block to see if we stay close to our schedule. Okay. We'll stop both of these timers before they go off so we won't interrupt what's happening.
Excellent. And if the next candidate is not in his or her chair at the appointed time, you will not be marked down if it's the board's fault. Okay. With that, let's begin.
So, Dr. Matakovich, if you could see if Mr. Taylor is available in the next room.
The candidates are waiting in the green room where we have snacks and beverages. No, it's just, it's not even a green room.
Really. Water and no bread. Yeah.
Water and no bread.
There's
no canned
elevator music in there.
Oh, jeez.
They're all wearing those headphones.
Mm-hmm. I remember it well. Good evening, Mr. Taylor. Good to see you again. Come on up. Good evening.
Thank you.
Thanks for applying. We are going to basically allot 15 minutes to each candidate. We have a series of seven questions, which Ms. Holmes will read. We want you to be able to sort of judge how much time you want to be able to want to spend on a particular question, but we want to also keep you mindful of how much time you have overall.
All right.
Okay,
good.
Great. And with that.
Okay.
Oh, and Mr. Robinette has got the hands.
We're allocating about 2 minutes a question then, roughly, and I'll cue when there's about a minute left and a stop sign, but you can choose to ignore them if you want.
I'll be careful to watch for your cues.
And though I'll be asking you the questions, you might want to look to the board when you respond, because that's who you're really speaking to.
I understand.
You can ignore me afterwards. In your view, Mr. Taylor, what are the critical issues facing public education, and how should a board respond to these issues?
Well, I think there's two ways to attack the question. One is for our district, and I think the other is a more global case. For our district, I would say that financing is always an issue, and trying to protect our basic aid dollars from the legislature is an important issue, I think. It's clearly an important reason why our district is not currently suffering what some of the other districts are suffering in terms of revenue loss. But I'm always fearful that there'll be another legislative run at it, and so that's an issue, I think. Secondly, for our district, with Dr. Valentine's retirement, I can't think of a more important issue for the board in terms of screening and selecting a good person to lead the district. And thirdly, I think maintaining our excellence as a district is crucial. On the global, there's all these initiatives, particularly on the federal level, that I think we need to watch out for, and that could either be a benefit to the district or a challenge or imperil us. And it's an exciting time with all this talk of reform, but sometimes you have to watch out what you're... I think what makes a good board and a good board member is somebody who's respectful to their colleagues, somebody who does their homework, someone who has a sense of humor, someone who... can patiently wade through all the detail, all the staff reports, all the minutia, all the regulations, all the court cases and things that are brought to you both in public session and closed session. I think what I bring would bring to the board is I've dealt with a lot of the issues you folks deal with in terms of the Brown Act, Public Records Act, budgets, having an effective relationship with public employee unions. When I was with Santa Barbara County, our budget was $444 million, so I'm used to looking at numbers with a lot of zeros behind them. I think my county government management experience gives me a good foundation. I don't pretend that that makes me an expert on education. It's one of the things that made me decide to apply for the board, because this is kind of a new new area for me to be involved in. The Personnel Commission's given me a good foundation for that, but I think the county background would be an asset, a good foundation.
Question three, what are the biggest challenges the board faces in our district, and what are the district's greatest strengths?
Gee, I did a good job of answering that question the first time, didn't I? I was anticipating that, apparently. Well, I think the district's greatest strengths are you have a well-earned reputation for good management and good governance. As I said in my earlier remarks, it wasn't always that way, and I remember it wasn't always that way, but it's certainly the case now. I think that both by parents and by your colleagues, by other elected officials in the county, the district is now looked at as a well-run, well-governed organization. Obviously, the excellence is borne out in the test scores of the students. They're consistently high, consistently above state averages, consistently among the highest of districts in the county. I do think that the, as I mentioned before, the resignation of Dr. Valentine, it's a scary time, really, because you have stability now, you have kind of a known quantity, you have a stable situation. Now, when your chief staff person leaves, that's a major challenge. I think one of the things that I would, again, help with is that as a county executive, I've had a lot of hiring decisions to make for key managers in a large organization. I think I have some good insights that I could help the board with as a member of the team. And I think of all the challenges that the district faces, that's the one that's foremost. I will say from my experience on the Personnel Commission, I'm quite aware of the taking over of more of the services for our special education and the very special challenges that's bringing to the district. It's an exciting thing to see happening, but it's also a challenge to make sure it's managed effectively.
Question four. As a board member, how would you foster a climate of trust, not only on the board, but also throughout the community and the district?
Well, I think trust comes from providing consistent and correct information to your constituents, to the parents, to the staff, to the teachers. And I think that's if you're consistent and you demand good quality staff work from the administration, and you're attempting to work in good faith with the employees, that comes across, and your constituents and all that your customers start believing you and keep believing you when you give them information in the good times and in the times when they're not so good, when they're challenging. I do think that of all the things that I think the district is facing now, I don't think this is a major issue. I don't come to every board meeting, so perhaps I'm not aware of that, but my impression just as a citizen, a taxpayer, and a parent of a student who just went through all 12 grades with this district is that this is an organization that provides good information to the community and provides a good product in terms of successful students who either go on to college, how to learn math, how to learn to do everything. And so I think that that is our biggest part of the achievement gap for this district. I think the special needs students also face an achievement gap, and the reasons are rather obvious. And then lastly, although this is a fairly well-to-do community in terms of per capita income, those who are not so well off, who are maybe doing the hardest kind of work in our community, their youngsters don't have all of the tools in their toolbox that others do. And so although we don't have a huge economically disadvantaged group in this community, we have some, and you just have to go to the homeless center to see them. So I think that's what the third leg of the stool as far as the gap. I think that's kind of covered the causes. The solutions, I think, are to continue to teach train our teachers for better communication with the English learners. That's probably the primary thing we need to do.
Question six. Tell us your understanding of how our district is funded and what your budget priorities would be.
Well, I touched on the basic aid character of the district as opposed to the revenue limit concept, which my understanding being that the revenue limit districts are at the mercy, I'll say, of the state of California in terms of their funding, and this district, being a basic aid district, receives the bulk of its general fund revenues from the local property tax. I'm old enough to remember the days when school boards actually set a property tax rate, and so all districts used to be, in essence, kind of like basic aid districts are. It's one of the things I like about this district is I think you're in more control of your destiny if you are relying on your local revenue as opposed to whatever may come out of Sacramento. As far as my budget priorities are concerned, I would say the bulk of the money has to be focused towards teachers. That's the group of your employees who provide the direct services. Teachers can't do their jobs without the support staff. And so I think treating employees fairly at the bargaining table is an important priority. By the same token, I'm an old county manager, and so I'm very familiar with looking at budgets not just 1 year at a time, but 2, 3, or 5 years out, and doing some projection on where you're going to be and not getting into traps of using one-time revenues for ongoing programs. It's just a killer when that starts happening. So the other part of my highest priority would be looking at the long-term and keeping the district solvent and in the fairly good financial shape you are in right now.
Final question. Could you share any experiences you might have had working with colleagues on a problem where there was both a diversity of opinions and a spirit of cooperation in the solution?
Well, I think I have a lot of county experience, but I think what's more maybe useful in answering the question is my experience on the Personnel Commission. I think your Personnel Commission is a very compatible group. Certainly see things differently, have learned how to disagree with each other in a really agreeable way. And I think one example that I'll just bring up was kind of relates to Rick. I went to a conference a year ago of other personnel commissioners and talking to some of my colleagues, and they said, well, of course, that's part of our annual evaluation of our personnel director. And I said, well, you do an annual evaluation? And they said, oh, absolutely. We do that, you know, just so that the director knows strengths and weaknesses and whatever course corrections are needed. So I brought that back to the commission and said, gee, seems like we've been missing the boat here. We're supposed to be doing this. We're supposed to be doing an annual evaluation. And interestingly enough, Rick was very supportive of it from the get-go. But I had some convincing to do with my other commissioners. Some felt that it was something that was kind of pejorative, that, you know, the only reason we would be doing an evaluation is if we were kind of unhappy. And so we...
that's good. Was in a cave.
That's a good idea.
Hi.
Hi.
We're going to change your name tag so you don't have to be Kent Taylor.
I just sit down? Okay, great. Thanks. Hi.
Good evening, Catherine.
Good evening.
And Catherine Shapiro.
Catherine Shapiro.
And first, on behalf of the board, thank you very much for applying. We're going to ask Kim Holmes, when she gets back, is going to ask you 7 questions. You have 15 minutes to respond to those questions. Rick is going to show you some time things, and that's mainly for your benefit. You can decide how much time you want to spend answering a question. We just want to try to keep you
rolling.
Well, understanding how much of the overall time you have left.
Okay, thank you.
I don't know what happens if you run out of time, because it's never happened, but just so you have an idea. Okay,
great. Okay, thank you.
And then Dr. Catherine Eisendrath Rogers, as the excellent clerk that she is, has suggested the next time we take like a minute between candidates so we can do our we're keeping an ongoing sheet. Please. Mrs. Holmes.
Hi.
And after I read the question, you can just address yourself to them.
Okay.
In your view, what are the critical issues facing public education, and how should a board respond to these issues?
Okay. I've made a list of important topics that I think the board has addressed and will continue to address in San Luis Obispo, including the achievement gap. Our budget, of course, it's always a problem for big organizations. District issues to create positive policies. Balance well-rounded education, which my kid gets every day. And reduce natural resources. And obviously the most important as a parent is the achievement gap right now for me. Because I volunteer at Pacheco and I've been there 10 years. And the kids try really hard, and if they're not succeeding on tests, then that's a big problem for me. So I just go through my issues.
Sure.
Okay, fine. Okay. Let's see. Pacheco does have a great success at the testing that they're doing now. When they get tested, they're not meeting the gap is being created. But when the children that have gone through the ELLs who've gone through Pacheco program test at middle school and high school level, they test a lot better than kids who haven't gone through the program. So I would suggest as the board to continue with Pacheco, make it more prolific if they can enable more students to go through the program. Make it larger. It seems like the classrooms are kind of tight, and I know that's an issue, not to put too many students in the classroom at any given time, because that makes it more difficult to everybody to handle, but maybe there's a way that can happen. And then another idea would be eventually to perhaps enable all the children in the school district to have a computer access at home, so that if they're not getting it at the teacher level, they can take they can take CDs home that this district has approved or created that cover that material, and then get more testing of it at home and practice of it at home. And also for the parents to get that testing at home and to encourage the participation in programs that engage early literacy for the district. That would be a groovy thing. Let's see, budget and finance. I think that you're doing an amazing job. Board with that. If obviously it will be an issue, and I would just like to suggest lowering the use of natural resources to trying to use the internet more. A lot of people have home computers. Locally at Pacheco, I think they've started sending the Monday packets home electronically, and that saves a lot on their budget with paper and resources and trees and stuff like that. Let's see, the district issues and goals. To find sources to increase enrollment, the housing prices are a bit deterrent around here, but maybe we could establish supplemental education classes for the students after school, or maybe on weekends, like, you know, Sunday afternoon, the kids could come in and learn things that maybe the budget doesn't have to fund, like college-geared classes or strategic planning. Cost-effective ways to save money, to reduce the mass mailings, which I mentioned earlier, send information electronically. You can't necessarily do permission slips with that, but they could do a lot of weekly things, weekly updates, and there's, you can even get notification that messages have been read. I do that. And then the balance, the well-rounded education. I think that applications should be established for getting grants on a continuous basis for teacher development grants in science and math. Research has shown that a lot of achievement is based on teachers understanding the material so that they can teach it correctly and have more than one way to teach it. My son had an excellent fifth grade teacher at Pacheco, and he taught math in different ways that I never would even think to teach it, because he must have understood the math that well that he could just make it so more accessible to lots of students from different economic, social backgrounds. Apply for grants for specific areas like music, design, science, engineering projects. I don't think we teach the kids early enough or give them credit that they can learn things early enough. Okay. Okay, all right. Well, maybe I did all of them at once. Okay, sorry.
You might have. Okay.
It's like the rush. Okay.
Question two. What makes a good board member and, excuse me, what makes a good board and a good board member? What special ingredient do you see yourself bringing to the board?
All right. I was reading up on my brochure here on how does a school district work. And apparently the board can makes decisions as a team. So I'm a good team member. I might not have the same qualifications as you, which is a good thing. I'm really good at internet research. If there's a project on the board, I will give it my all. I research things really well. I am very meticulous. I attack things like I entered Pacheco like 2000, 2001, something like that. And they wanted it was the first year of the full class graduating, and I went. They said, you know, how well do you do this graphic stuff? And I'm like, I'm pretty good at the graphic stuff. I'm a photographer. I do graphic stuff pretty well. They're like, we really want a yearbook for the graduating class that went through the whole program. And I'm like, that would be kind of difficult to do. But we did it. We finally did it. So just like that. I'm just like, you know, I take things. I'm very good as a team player, and I'm really diligent in doing that. Okay.
Question 3, what are the biggest challenges the board faces in our district, and what are the district's greatest strengths?
Oh, I think the greatest strengths is that you work well together as a team. You really strive. I mean, the amount of stuff that's already in place. When we first arrived here 12 years ago, there was already internet. There was already a lot of computers in the classroom. There's, you know, a lot of positive things that made it an easy transition for Zoltan and our family. And so a lot of the board just seems to be doing amazing things, and to all the responsibilities you have, it's just like you get everything done. So in that aspect, I hope I answered that question. Okay.
Any more questions? Question 4. As a board member, how would you foster a climate of trust, not only on the board, but also throughout the community and the district?
I think to get trust, you have to really listen to people and try your best to achieve what they think is what they're trying to hope to achieve for their children. And if you don't, if you aren't able to, you know, get what they want, show them that you've tried to do the best that you can. Because, you know, you can't just say, okay, and then not do anything. Nobody's going to believe what you do. So.
Question 5, how do you define the term achievement gap? What, in your opinion, are some of the causes and possible solutions?
Oh, yeah, this is a big one. All right, so I went online, and I was not going to print this out, but I finally was referencing it enough that I did print it out. They did a study in 2002 for the achievement, because it's an ongoing problem. One of the things that we had when we were growing up is that it's being solved a lot by Pacheco, the achievement gap. We can see that over time. And we are getting more people flowing into the situation that it's going to be happening to. 10 years ago, the socioeconomics, like they say the white people, but let's say English-only people, it was the population in the school district, it was like, I have that written down, hopefully. Or maybe I delete it from my notes. That would not be good. Okay, it was like 38 to 40%. So they were almost equal, the ESL and the EO, learning in the school district. And now it's 28 to 38. It's like almost double. So you're going to, oh, a minute, okay. So I think that if we do the supplemental learning and we continue with Pacheco and teaching the kids and provide eventually netbooks at home, so that parents can learn and maybe do after-school learning. My mother had to learn math to help my brother out at school. It comes from the home, that the parents aren't educated. They don't feel comfortable enough.
Okay. Final question.
Oh, final question.
Could you share any experiences you might have had working with colleagues on a problem where there was both a diversity of opinions and a spirit of cooperation in the solution?
Let's see. The yearbook. We did those. We did. We also did recently. A lot of times, people will do. They'll volunteer at the school, and they'll hit a bridge where they can't do stuff. So they'll come to me. I have people, many people from different walks of life, come to me and ask me for help, and I'll show them how to do something, walk through something, set up a web page, and stuff like that. And then for the directory, before now, it's probably online, but they were saying how, like, oh, well, we shouldn't include people's email addresses. And I go, that saves people money and saves people time for email addresses. So, like, they listened to what I did, but maybe they thought that it wouldn't be a good thing. Or we, Anything? No. Okay. So the differences of what should go in the yearbook and how it should be done and things like that, we worked together and worked it out, and it came out to be a perfect project where it get printed and all that stuff. So I don't know what to have you guys. Okay. Anything else? Any questions?
We have 7 minutes left.
Oh, you have 7 minutes left.
Mm-hmm. Oh, 7 minutes. Oh, I'm too quick. Oh, questions?
Anything else you'd like to say to the board? We're out of questions.
Okay, let's see. I was very happy to see that you guys are using Rosetta Stone. I was going to suggest that for parents to learn that, you know, if there's a way that that we can get that to Pacheco parents so that they could learn English to help their kids at home with homework, that would be great. You know, I think that parents set up the environment for kids to learn, and if the achievement gap is there, it's probably because the parents aren't involved more in the process. You know, at Pacheco, whenever there was a room parent, it wasn't an English-speaking room parent and a Spanish-speaking room parent. It was usually just an English-speaking room parent, and they got someone else to translate for everything. That was kind of frustrating. But, you know, we worked it out. Yes? Anything?
Okay.
No? Okay, sorry it's too soon. Sorry I talked too fast.
Brevity is a desired trait on the school board. A rare one. Thank you very much, Catherine.
Okay,
we appreciate
thank you.
It. And we appreciate you applying as well.
Okay.
All right, folks, we can make our notes and prepare for our next candidate.
That might be easier because you can just watch it and see. Now we're ahead of schedule. Amazing. If Mr. Lathrop is here and if the board likes, we could go ahead and start him if you... But if you want to spend the time to take notes...
Good evening, Mr. Lathrop.
Good evening. How are you? We're
well. How are you doing? Thank you very much on behalf of the board for applying. We appreciate it and volunteering for this service. And what we're going to do is we're allocating 15 minutes to each candidate. We're guidelines. We are using Mrs. Holmes is going to read 7 questions that we've been asking each of the candidates.
Great.
We want you to be able to determine how much time you want to spend on each question, and at the same time, we're going to help you with just sort of an idea of how much time has gone by, and then roughly we want so that you know where you are in your 15 minutes.
Sure. A bit different, primarily. Looking at the property values in the district. So anything that the district could do to support property values, that would be great too, because that would be essentially supporting the district's budget also.
Question 2. What makes a good board and a good board member? What special ingredient do you see yourself bringing to the board?
Well, definitely in reference to the board, you have to like each other, learn to like each other. Definitely take a step forward and put your hand out to make sure that you be a good board member. Respect each other as far as what they have to say. Doesn't mean you have to agree all the time, but respectfully disagree is okay. Boardmanship is very important. If you don't have a board that's working together, you're not going to be able to push ahead the overall goals and objectives of the district.
Question three. What are the biggest challenges the board faces in our district, and what are the district's greatest strengths?
I believe probably the biggest challenge right now, as of recently, as we've read in the papers, is searching for a new superintendent. This is very important to overall make that connection with the district, also an individual that could carry out what the board's policies and directions are for the district, someone that is has a good rapport with the community and staff and everyone, all the stakeholders of the district. I would say as of today, that would be the most important goal or most important thing that the board would be looking at. Naturally, there's other things that we want to do and keep the high standards as far as the district is concerned. I have to put in a little bit of plug. I was born and raised in San Luis Obispo, went through the system, Hawthorne, right here at the middle school. This was the cafeteria, graduated from the high school. Have four children. They all graduated from San Luis High, went through the system. I actually have grandchildren that are starting the system, about 1 year old. So I know it's an outstanding school district. I may be a little prejudiced, but I think one of the best in the area. And it would be very important to me to make sure that standard is still very high.
As a board member, how would you foster a climate of trust, not only on the board, but also throughout the community and the district?
I think the most important thing as far as establishing that trust is, again, being a good listener. Make sure that you listen to what people have to say. Give them the respect as far as what they're presenting. And just being a person that you can build a rapport with. In my dealings in my private sector, I have always said to people, what's most important to me is not the deal, but it's the relationship that you can build with people, because that's the most important thing. You may not agree today, but if you have that good relationship down the road, it's gonna pay back, and that's very important to me. I like to believe that everyone I meet and work with, you know, that we can basically create a good relationship or a friendship, somebody that you can, know and like for a long time.
How do you define the term achievement gap? What, in your opinion, are some of the causes and possible solutions?
Well, achievement gap to me, this might be a little bit of a tough one for me. It's the idea of being able to look for the good in everyone as far as what they can achieve. In other words, as far as what level. Some people would say, well, everyone has to be at this level here, or if you're down here, you know, there's some kind of failure. But we all learn at different rates. We all learn things differently. We have our specialties and so forth, and we probably are experts in all certain areas where another area we're not. So the idea is that lots of times people want to put a label on that there's this big gap, you know, that you haven't met this area. But I believe that the achievement gap is a little bit less than what we expect, because we all are experts in a certain area one way or the other. You know, what was the second part of that question?
What, in your opinion, are some of the causes and possible solutions?
Well, again, the causes, I think, are being able to recognize how people learn. Again, we are all different types of learners. Some are very visual learners. Some are very, I want to say, verbal learners, things of that nature. So what we have to do as a group or as a teaching body is recognize who these people are, try to figure out how they learn and how to present material in that fashion in order to close that gap.
Question six, tell us your understanding of how our district is funded and what your budget priorities would be.
Well, definitely, I got to tell you a little story. Some of my background that you've seen there, that I was a sitting assistant superintendent of business for Lucy Miller School District. Real advantage, a real opportunity to for the board to do future board budgeting and things of that nature. So,
final question. Could you share any experiences you might have had working with colleagues on a problem where there was both a diversity of opinions and a spirit of cooperation in the solution?
I would have to fall back onto my experience in schools in general. For approximately 10 years, I was responsible for the district-wide budget development process. In one particular district, we had a budget committee consisting of about 28 members, all the different stakeholders, definitely with all different opinions and priorities and opinions on how things should come together, where we had to essentially pull those groups together to come out with a positive end at the other side. So, you know, I would have to say that's a pretty good example of getting people together and trying to make the right decisions for the overall district.
You have 10 minutes left.
10 minutes. Well, what do we want to talk about? I thought I kept seeing those one-minute cards go, but maybe not. Oh, well, if you're giving me the opportunity to speak, that would be great. Just to let you know a little bit, I definitely, like I mentioned earlier, am a local person here. The district means a lot to me and my family. We still attend a lot of activities at the district, even though we don't have children presently in the district. And it's very important to us to be able to give back to an organization that's given us so much. Recently, I've had a lot of extra time in reference to being able to do more community service or volunteering. And it just seems to be the right time to step out and do something of that nature. And I would just like to say that if I was selected, you would have a board member that would put in the time, if not more. Because we have the time, and it's an area that I'm very interested in. And it's like most of us, we have a tendency to gravitate towards what our strong points or expertise or our interests are. And definitely, we would be very interested in sitting on the board.
Mm-hmm. Thank you, Mr. Lathrop. We're going to take a 10-minute break and
maybe more.
Reconvene. Mr. Robinette will set that timer for 10 minutes and put it by a microphone that's on. Thank you. We are back. It's always funny on the AGP channel when these groups and public meetings go to a break, because then, boom, you're just back suddenly. But it never works that way in real life. So our next candidate is going to be Ellen Sheffer, and she's leaving the isolation booth and coming forward. Hey, Ellen. The board wishes to thank you for applying and volunteering, and we're going to ask you, Kim is going to ask you 7 questions. We're kind of holding candidates to 15 minutes. You can use your time however you wish. Rick will be using some clever hand signals that we put out to bid. And we're
okay. It's a suggestion.
And I will say that everybody's been running short, so, and there's nothing wrong with
and
that.
And you like that.
And I'm not allowed to say at this time. Anyway, go ahead, Kim.
And I will ask the questions, but you can address your responses to the board.
Thank you.
In your view, what are the critical issues facing public education? How should a board respond to these issues?
Well, I would say one of the critical issues facing the board now, similar to what is facing our state of California, and that's budget issues. I know that we are a basic aid district, and that's a concern to maintain that status and to deal with our budget as best we can to prepare for the possibility of that changing at any time, given the circumstances of our property tax revenues and perhaps the whims of the governor and the legislature in Sacramento. Hopefully, it'll better serve all of our students. The board's response to these issues, I'm way late, aren't I?
No.
I think the board responds by helping to create and implement a strategic plan. I think the strategic plan is an evolving document that the board looks at frequently, and we, as the board, would then have capable people make wise decisions at the administrative level, who will then make wise decisions on down through the sites to be able to implement the direction provided by the board.
Question two, what makes a good board and a good board member? What special ingredient do you see yourself bringing to the board?
I would say the overriding attribute to make a good board is mutual respect. The ability to hear one another, to listen to conflicting ideas, to respect those ideas, knowing that they come from a place of a desire to do the right thing for our children, for the students, and to then work together to seek mutual compromise when necessary, to look at the other person's ideas carefully and closely, and then seek common ground.
And the questions are before you if you need to refresh yourself.
What special ingredient do I bring to the board? Thank you. You're so diplomatic. I think that I bring in a willingness to hear and listen and to learn from the board members who have served. I've been involved in paying attention to board issues for many years. I think I'm familiar with the workings of the board to some extent. I would have a desire to become an integral part of the decision-making process.
Question three, what are the biggest challenges the board faces in our district, and what are the district's greatest strengths?
I would say one of the biggest challenges, my understanding, that the board faces in our district is perhaps falls under the category of union negotiations, of contract negotiations with the various unions. I think that there has been some, over the years, not the most congenial relationship between the board and the unions. I can't speak to why that is. I can't speak necessarily to what the solution is, other than striving to rectify either past slights or difficulties, and hope I do believe that everyone has the interests of the students at heart, the bottom line, and it's working together to help realize what can be done, how to achieve what will work in the best interests of the students of the district. On the other hand, the greatest strength, I think, again, is just having the children as our main focus. I think realizing, paying attention to things like changing demographics, the changes in the socioeconomic, the economic situation in our community, realizing the impact that has on not just the students, but the teachers and the families of perhaps the people who come to work every day and have been coming to work every day and may have changes in their own families, but they still get up in the morning, put one foot in front of the other, and show up to teach the children. And realizing, again, the impact that this may have on the students attending the schools. We have a greater number of free and reduced lunch eligibility students. We have a greater number of little bit of fluidity in the district with people coming and going. And we certainly have our fair share of number of students who are being impacted by the economic situation right now. And I think that the ability of everyone to keep the focus on the students and realizing that their ability to have a quality education is going to serve them, and that's our job.
As a board member, how would you foster a climate of trust, not only on the board, but also throughout the community and the district?
Well, certainly having the open meetings and the televised meetings for
a gap. What, in your opinion, are some of the causes and possible solutions?
Well, I think the term achievement gap has to do with the students who, I guess because I've looked at it on so many graphs, and it's so powerful to see just our students, and it's not just the haves and the have-nots, although that's certainly a part of it, but our higher-achieving students typically come from a background of better educated parents, families where English is the first language, families where employment is steady and certain, and then our students who are not so fortunate, who have not, who perhaps come from families where English is not a first language, who are new to the area, perhaps new to the country, whose families are not as well educated. And typically those students fall lower on test scores, on achievement, on the ability to keep up with the desired levels, the standards, with our standards-based education to meet those goals that are set out. The solutions, I think, are having teachers who are well-trained in differentiated learning, who are able to take a close look at their students and develop specific approaches to each student, ways to recognize and address the needs of the students, the learning needs of the students, and recognize and be able to address perhaps needs of the students that maybe can't be met directly in the classroom, but be aware of the resources available both within the school and in the community.
Tell us your understanding of how our district is funded and what your budget priorities would be.
Our district is funded primarily by property tax revenues. Those have decreased somewhat during these times of economic straits in the state of California as property tax levels have decreased. We're very dependent upon our large property tax payers such as PG&E and need to be aware that of what's going on with them. We've certainly had challenges in the past or need for concern in the past as their situation has changed or they have discussed that. It's been a little while now, but those have been worries in the past. We're out of the 1,000 districts. It's my understanding that out of the 1,000 or so districts in California, we're one of about 100 that are funded this way, and that is a challenge to, as Mr. Miller says, kind of fly under the radar in Sacramento, not draw too much attention to our fortunate situation. The state is dipping more into our, taking a little more from our categorical funding. I think about $1.7 million this year and close to $4 million for the 2010-2011 school year. We're going to need to address that. We have reserves of about $20 million and we've been fortunate to have a conservative and steady reserve pool that we can draw upon and are drawing upon right now, but not too much. About 85% of our budget, or a little more, goes towards personnel, which leaves us some for the sites, but not a huge amount of money. The site funding is each site has money to deal with their own, address their own site-specific needs. Those are administered through school site councils, the management team at the high school, making those sorts of decisions. Budget priorities, I think, are primarily keeping our heads above water through these difficult times. We have about, of our 400 or so teachers, we have quite a large number, I think nearly 100, 80 or so, who are 60 years of age or older, and that will be seeing the need to address those retiring teachers. On the one hand, that will assist in some budget dollars. On the other hand, we'll be losing a great number of experienced classroom teachers. Does that answer the question?
Final question. Could you share any experiences you might have had working with colleagues on a problem where there was both a diversity of opinions and a spirit of cooperation in the solution?
I'm not always the smartest person in the room, that there are other people with more experience with other ideas, but that what I bring to the table is valuable as well. So I think that the spirit of cooperation in a situation like the school board is, again, realizing that we're here to serve the school district. We're here to serve the employees of the district and the students in the district.
And we have about 4 minutes left if you want to make any more comments.
I really wanted to get to do this. I think that I bring to the table a deep and abiding interest in our district, the district as a whole, and in the students in our district. I really care about the needs of the students and the ability of the teachers and everyone involved to meet the needs of the students. So that's what I would bring. And that's all.
Thank you, Ellen. And we'll just take a moment with the board members, and we'll have our next candidate who... excuse me.
I think there would be a way to turn that...
is Mr. Schrage.
I mean, you've got a box of these up in your office. I didn't look to see. I got that one because it's the same as this, but maybe they work differently.
Thank you. No, I'm sorry, Director. You don't want that. You don't want that. I get myself enough trouble at the Dutchie's Dome.
Schrage, right?
Is it? Schrage.
Schrage. Oh, I've been getting bad advice on pronouncing your name. Welcome and thank you very much for applying. The board wishes to thank you for that and we appreciate it. And Mrs. Holmes is going to ask the questions on behalf of the board.
All right.
You'll probably want to direct your responses to the board.
Okay.
We're kind of holding candidates to 15 minutes. It's not a hard and fast thing.
Mm-hmm.
We want you to be able to decide how much time you want to spend on a particular question.
Okay.
Rick will have these clever signs that will sort of give you some guidance.
2 minutes.
Great.
And that's based on, to make sure I understand, that's based on an average time per question.
Mm-hmm.
Okay. So don't get thrown off. I probably should have explained that to other people, too. But okay. Thank you.
Great.
Mrs. Holmes?
And the questions are on the table if you need to refer to those at any time.
I better use my glasses because I can see all of you, no problem, but I do need glasses for close-up.
He's got them.
I'm assuming I brought reading glasses. I am. There we go. Okay. Right.
Okay. In your view, Mr. Schrage, what are the critical issues facing public education, and how should a board respond to these issues?
I think funding is probably the major issue, and priorities would be an additional issue.
And a good board member. What special ingredient do you see yourself bringing to the board?
There are three qualities probably that a board member should have. One is school smarts. That's, academic. That's education. I've taught 15 different college classes. I don't know any other faculty member that I've ever met that have taught 15 different courses, not just classes, but courses. That's school smart. But there's also street smart. That's figuring out what is necessary. And there are things that you learn by common sense, not in the classroom. And then there's the uncommon sense, the thinking against the curve, being creative. And I think a school board member kind of has to tackle all of those, by using their school smarts, which means they can read a contract, know when money is being spent foolishly or unwisely. They can write simply and easily in terms of, whatever the school board needs to present to the public. The street smarts are the ability to figure out what is necessary for a school system to apply itself to a limited agenda, limited funding. And the not so smart is really sometimes being creative when necessary. Okay.
What are the biggest challenges the board faces in our district, and what are the district's greatest strengths?
Well, I examined both your recent agendas and your school board policy, and basically you have all your ducks in a row. You figure out what's necessary. But as you know, that sometimes does not work. There are school systems that pretend to follow the rules, and they don't always. And I think the obligation of a board member is to listen attentively to what the administrator of the school system, what the teachers, what the parents, what the students want, but also to make decisions that tell the school board and the administration what is required to be accomplished. And I think the biggest challenge that you would face would be to kind of address the future. If you prepare for the jobs of yesterday, 50 years ago there were 70 dairies in this county. There aren't any now. So in terms of preparing people to be dairy farmers, you're not preparing them for jobs that exist. If you prepare people to be printers by letterpress printing or photo offset printing, you're not preparing them for jobs that exist. If you're preparing them to learn BASIC or COBOL or FORTRAN, all of which I've learned, you're not preparing them for the future because you'll have other technologies and other needs. And so you have to kind of be futurist at the same time that you are responsible. One of the biggest problems you're always going to have is that the minute you build a school, that school goes downhill from day one. You've got to fix windows. You've got to repair toilets. You've got vandalism. You've got graffiti. And you have all these challenges of applying funds that are limited in terms of preparing that. And that's not education. Okay.
You don't need to stop when we show that if you have further comments.
That'd be great for the Olympics, right? 7.2.
As a board member, how would you foster a climate of trust, not only on the board, but also throughout the community and the district?
Well, I think the obligation of a board member is to, you know, hold the superintendent to the task. At the same time, it's appropriate and important that you not be a troublemaker. In other words, like a politician, you sort of have a thin skin. You make a recommendation, you'll be outvoted by other members of the board. The superintendent often has the obligation to do something different than you suggest. But you have the obligation as a board member, if you're reading a contract, if you're reading a piece of paper, to say, I don't think this is right. You know, and I think that's the board member's responsibility. Once you're outvoted, you're outvoted. You don't take that to the newspaper. You don't take it to the streets. But I think your task in the community is to build up the school system and to build up the community as much as you can.
How do you define the term achievement gap? What, in your opinion, are some of the causes and possible solutions?
Well, part of that is based on the teaching to the test, the achievement gap, because other avenues of measuring achievement. So the achievement gap really is the difference between what a student wants, what the parent wants for them, what the school wants for them, and then when they go to community college or the military, what they want for them. Okay.
Tell us your understanding of how our district is funded and what your budget priorities would be.
Well, the county gets about $425 million, of which 15% goes to ERAF, the Educational Augmentation Fund. I don't see the people behind me, but that's the state stealing money from the county. And that's 15% of the money. And they're supposedly returning that to the school system. Of that $360 million or so dollars that the county collects in property tax, and of course there are other taxes that the county collects, a little bit over 50% goes to education of various sorts, and that's the community college system, the high school system, the middle school system, and the elementary school system. And the problem is that in the old days and in other states, you could always reassess properties and raise them. Your neighbors sell a house for $500,000, all the other houses on the block are $500,000. You can't do that in California because of Proposition 13. And actually, last year, the funding went down for the first time since the Depression. So it makes it more difficult for a school board and a school to kind of predict, you know, what their future is. It's not just, well, we need this and we need that. It doesn't exist. And so you have to make various decisions. And I know you have a lot of priorities. And you send students to Michigan to compete in automotive abilities. You send students to Phoenix, Arizona to compete in artistic abilities. You send bands in other locations. And, you know, once you do that and you put $500 or $5,000 toward that, if that's part of the school funds, I think that limits you. And you have to, again, you have to make priorities on how you're going to spend your money. You have a lot of choices, and that's what brings the school up. Those are the challenges, but that's what brings the school up. I did what's called a SWOT analysis. I did not create this myself. It's done in other industries. It's strengths, weaknesses, opportunities, and threats. The strength of the school system is pretty simple. It's the teachers, it's the students, it's what you want to do. The weaknesses are really in the funding and the ability to, you know, to find ways of presenting things. The opportunities are sending students to different locations, having the teachers of the year, not just the local teachers, but winning statewide competitions and that type of thing. And the threats are the graffiti, the violence, the vandalism, the problems that exist in schools, and also the outside threats because the economy gets soft. So you're here, you prepare students, so they get good grades, and they go to Cuesta College. There's no summer school. They go to some other school. They get a degree. There's no job for them. And so, you know, you've done your job, but you haven't done a complete job. And that's where you have to kind of be futurist and think outside the box and have alternatives for students to measure up.
Final question. Could you share any experiences you might have had working with colleagues on a problem where there was both a diversity of opinions and a spirit of cooperation in the solution?
Well, that's a good question. I'm serving on the grand jury right now, and while I can't discuss cases, I think that's an area where, because we have 19 members of the county that have different opinions, and I love the word vacate. I'm ready to go on vacation, but when they mean vacate, that means something that you've worked on for 6 months. You can't get 12 people to agree on that. And it's difficult. And it's not just the power of persuasion. You have to show the other jurors that a case meets the requirement that some government entity has failed to do their duty, has failed to follow procedure, has misspent its money. And if you don't get 12 members to agree on it, it's the glove that doesn't fit, you know, or does fit. And so that's one of the problems. I was teaching college at age 22. I was at the Harvard faculty at age 23. I was an employment counselor at age 21. Probably too young, and I interviewed over 5,000 people and sent them out in the streets, and I grew up in the Midwest and sent them to Ford and General Motors, and, you know, they certainly didn't have a job for life because a lot of those companies don't exist to the degree they did before. But I worked with employment counselors from other industries. I worked with teachers and worked with superintendents in different school districts. And the spirit of cooperation is listening more than telling. I think that's part of intelligence. And I think as a board, you sort of have opportunity anymore, Cleveland, places like that. Unfortunately, my high school that I went to used to have, there were 22 high schools in Detroit. We used to have 50% of the Merit Scholar winners or finalists in the whole city. It was very competitive and very creative. We had two PhDs in high school as teachers. The academic was very important, as well as the sports and the social organizations. We're allowed to have fraternities, so we had social organizations. I saw my high school on television about 15 years ago. They kind of featured it. I said, "Oh, I'm going to see that." They have 8 armed patrolmen guarding halls. I used to be hall monitor. "Hey, kid, where's your blue pass? Where's your pink pass? You know, to go to the lavatory." Now you have, you know, armed policemen saying, you know, "Put those drugs down," or, you know, "Take that AK-47 out of here." I think the larger schools have that problem. I know a dean at University High School in Los Angeles, and he says almost every day they have drug problems, they have violence problems, they have guns on campus, they have pregnancy problems every day. I think at my whole high school experience there were maybe 2 or 3 pregnancy problems, and I don't think there are any drug problems that I know of. So I think those are changed, and those are your challenges of the board. Basically, you don't handle them directly, but you do handle them indirectly because sometimes somebody has, say, an appeal, and it comes before the board, and you have to listen to the appeal, whether it's from a student or a faculty member, what have you. And I think that if I come to the board, it's not that I'm going to change you or, you know, be smarter than you or figure out things that you haven't figured out. I hope I can fit in at the same time that I hope that you would trust that I will, you know, listen patiently, read contracts, read obligations, read the policies that the board has created over the last 6 or so years, and try to figure out what will make, you know, a better education for young people, because I think that's what your main goal is.
Okay. Thank you, Mr. Rager. We appreciate it. And we have one more candidate who will be interviewing. And thank you.
Sure, thank you.
Board members, take a moment. Good evening, Mr. Singwall. Did I say that correctly?
Singwald, yes.
Singwall.
That's correct.
And it's Erlin, correct?
Erlin.
Hi. On behalf of the board, thank you for applying and volunteering your time. And what we're doing this evening is Mrs. Holmes is going to ask her ask 7 questions that we've been asking all of the candidates. And she'll be asking them, but she'll probably want to respond to the board with your answers. And we're keeping candidates to about 15 minutes. We want you to be able to decide how much time you want to spend on a particular question. Rick Robinette there has signs just to kind of advise you of. Okay, just so you know how you are in time. But it's your choice, and I will tell you the candidates have been running a little short. So, okay, thank you.
Don't feel hurried. You probably have plenty of time for whatever you need to say. In your view, what are the critical issues facing public education? How should a board respond to these issues?
Okay. Public education definitely is facing a lot of critical issues at this time. I think that one of the most critical of those issues, in my view, is the state and federal, you know, mandates to provide more and more programs and services, which are indeed needed, but at the same time, we have, as a school district, very limited revenues available to continue to provide those services.
What makes a good board and a good board member? What special ingredient do you see yourself bringing to the board?
I think what really makes a good board member is being a good listener. We hold public hearings, and really one of the primary purposes of a public hearing is to get comment from the public and consider that comment in your decision-making process. I am a San Luis Obispo City Planning Commissioner. Every other Wednesday evening, I hold, or our commission holds, public hearings, and you know, that's what I do. I listen honestly to the feedback that I receive from the public, and I use that to make informed decisions that are serving the interests of the public. And a board member, it represents the general public, not your own individual interests. It represents our constituents, the taxpayers, the voters. And I think the ingredient that I bring to the board is my experience. As a city planning commissioner, I have a lot of experience in a public hearing setting, subject, you know, to the Brown Act. I'm very familiar with the noticing requirements and other requirements of the Brown Act, and I really think I could hit the ground running as a board member and consider the public's testimony when making decisions and making them informed decisions.
What are the biggest challenges the board faces in our district, and what are the district's greatest strengths?
Well, I think I touched on, under the critical issues, the first question, the very limited funding available and the need to provide more services. I also think that a big concern of mine as a parent actually of a special needs child is the achievement gap and closing the achievement gap and providing learning disabled students and economically disadvantaged students with the resources that they need to be successful in school. I think, although in the school district, I think we should be very proud of the fact that on average our students test better than the national average in performance exams. At the same time, we need to be looking also at the fact that that's not spread evenly across the spectrum of our students. The economically disadvantaged students, learning disabled students, don't tend to test quite so well. And I think closing that achievement gap is a big challenge for the district, and I would like to help in that process.
As a board member, how would you foster a climate of trust, not only on the board, but also throughout the community and the district?
I think the key to fostering a climate of trust is complete transparency, doing everything out in the open, and not just complying with state law for having open meetings, but being proactive about it, reaching out into the community, engaging in the community, informing the community about what's going on in the school district. And also, I think, in staff's interactions with parents and families, to always be very forthcoming with information. In the case of a family of a special education student, I think rather than just handing out a flyer explaining what their rights are as a family of a special education student under the state and federal laws, but to actually, take the time to sit down with them and explain what that means, and if need be, walk them through the process, provide them with the resources that they need to be, effective, informed parents of a special education student, as an example.
How do you define the term achievement gap? What, in your opinion, are some of the causes and possible solutions?
Yeah, I touched on this. So I would define the achievement gap as the gap between, special education, learning disabled, other disabled students, economically disadvantaged students, students that come from households where English is not the primary language spoken. It's a fact based on national, testing and studies that those students don't tend to perform as well on performance exams as the average average student. And so that's the achievement gap, and I think that is a significant problem. I really think it's important that we provide the special education students the much in common with them, that we all have a lot of similar experiences. We all want the best, for our children. We all want to see our children in a general education setting, and I think we want them to be as successful as possible. And one of the concerns that came up is the fact that there's been three different teachers in the class over the last, my son's only been in there this year, but apparently since last year, there's been three different teachers in the class. And I understand that there are limitations that explain that, such as limited contract terms of different teachers. But we're talking about the segment of our students that are most vulnerable to these minor changes in their schedule. And I think we need to be very sensitive to that and try and provide as much consistency as possible in their academic environment. That's an example.
Tell us your understanding of how our district is funded and what your budget priorities would be.
My understanding of how the district is funded is we receive a percentage of property tax revenues in our district. And I want to say that I don't know the percentage offhand. I think it was set by ERAF or some state law. But like I said before, it is a fixed amount of revenue that we receive. Also, we do receive funds directly from the state and I believe the federal government. There are a lot of grant opportunities that a school district can apply for to provide specialized types of services. I think the top budget priority, it's rather obvious, it should be providing the children of the school district with the highest level of education possible. And also, as I've discussed, the achievement gap is a big issue personally, affecting me, and it's really probably the reason why I'm here before you this evening is I see my role on the board really not only representing the general public and our constituents as a whole, but advocating for the special needs children of our school district. I want to be an advocate for our special needs students. So it's whenever we make difficult budget decisions, we need to ask, how is it going to affect the educational quality of our children? And also we need to consider how it's going to affect our ability to do our part in closing the achievement gap.
Could you share any experiences you might have had working with colleagues on a problem where there was both a diversity of opinions and a spirit of cooperation in the solution?
Sure. I definitely have been in that situation numerous times, particularly on the as a member of the City Planning Commission. I'm trying to think of a good example here. We, fortunately on the Planning Commission, we have pretty similar views of things, which makes things go fairly smoothly. But there have been situations where that hasn't been, the case. We recently reviewed a project, the Shelf Station on Santa Rosa and Higuera Streets. The owner of that project, owner of that property, the Shelf Station, has proposed to construct a car wash to expand its existing use of that property. And that was one of the biggest, most, I don't really want to say heated debates, but one of the best debates we had on the Planning Commission. And I can't say in the end of it we came out with a consensus. It was a 3-4 decision, and that's just the nature of being on a board or a commission. It's usually majority roles. But I think there was a great land use planning theories discussion on the Planning Commission when we reviewed that project about, if you look at our general plan, it's for the city, it's a long-term document looking, out at a 30-year time frame of what types of uses we want to see throughout the city and in the downtown area. And the general plan included particular policies for that property encouraging a pedestrian-oriented development. And my view of it was, although in this difficult economic time, in this difficult economic time, it's very difficult to tell a property owner that they can't, expand a use of their property. However, thinking of the general plan as a long-term document, I had to vote against the project because it was inherently an auto-dominated use. Working two jobs and taking a full load of units at Cal Poly, and I don't like to brag, but this is something that I am very proud about because I still managed to graduate the top student in the number two student in the College of Architecture. With honors. And, I am proud of that just because, I had so many other things going on in my life and I had to work, very hard to put myself through school. And I think that's actually why I did so well in school is because I really valued the education because I was working really hard really hard for it. I'm also my profession is a land use planner for the County of San Luis Obispo. I review development projects, particularly in the coastal zone. I manage the siting and development of wireless telecommunications facilities throughout the County of San Luis Obispo. Before that, I worked for a land use consulting firm for a couple years, and in that capacity, I managed low-income housing programs for a variety of cities and counties across the state of California. I managed a low-income first-time homebuyers program for the County of Imperial. I managed a low-income housing rehabilitation program for this consortium of jurisdictions in the Salinas Valley, including Greenfield, Gonzales, King City, and Soledad. That was quite an experience. So I have a lot of experience and knowledge in the operations of local government, and that's something I think I could really bring to this board. And also, I wrote a lot of successful state and federal grants for housing projects, such as CDBG grants and HOLM grants. I'm available. I am very familiar of those funding opportunities, and that's also something, as a board member, that I would do. I would definitely work with staff to encourage them to pursue all grant funding that may be available to provide special programs for our students.
Okay, board members, take a moment to complete your notes. We have on the schedule a break built in. Boy, we're on schedule. That's just absolutely amazing. Thank you all for that. Well, I'm sure that's what it must be. So we'll take a 10-minute break, and we will reconvene. And I think we'll do public comment, unless board members have some other ideas. Public comment, then board deliberation, and then we'll go from there. Okay? So we'll see you all in 10.
You're done.
Thank you very much. We will move into the next stage of our deliberation. It's correct. Thank you for that. There's nothing like experience having been president on a number of occasions such as yourself, and I defer to that. Ready? What we would like to do now is open it up for public comment. I don't know whether we have any requests to speak, but that's not really necessary. Please come forward and state your name for the record, sir.
Oh, thank you.
I will assume any identity you wish me to assume. Tony Evans, kindergarten teacher at Los Ranchos Elementary, 25 years in this district, 35 years in education, public education, and I guess I'm going to use this slightly as a soapbox, but what I want to say is that as a teacher, nothing I value more is when I do, in fact, close the achievement gap. As a team, whomever, into this board and saying, our state standards stink. They are causing our kids to artificially fail. We're breaking them when we don't need to, and then we have to run around and look for expensive fixes. To hold the federal government accountable for the fact that if they did nothing else but fully fund special education so it didn't infringe on the general budget, we could do a lot to help all of our students. And so I want a fighting board member. Yes, I understand. I don't want a fanatic. But at the same time, we can accept our fate and kind of trudge through it, or we can decide as a board to start fighting some of these things. We may not win, but I'd feel a whole lot better if you were on my side fighting with me. Thank you. Have a good evening.
Thank you, Tony. And I'm glad how you made it relevant to tonight's agenda. That's good. Anyone else like to speak regarding the appointment of a replacement for John Spadafore this evening? Okay. Thank you. I will open up the discussion to the board members.
Well, I just wanted to, first of all, and I tried to personally thank everybody, just to thank people for the six people who put themselves out to tackle what is and can be a very difficult job. And I think the challenges we're going to be facing for the next probably 4 to 5 years are tremendous. Our district is in great shape right now with passionate teachers like Mr. Evans. I think every one of our teachers is passionate. Fighting the things that you're talking about, Tony, are going to be important, but making sure that our financial future, because the finances do drive everything, and coming to agreement with our community on what kinds of things we're going to need to look at as a district and what our priorities are as a district. That said, I feel like we've just had a great group of people and lots of people who really thought about what it is that they'd like our district to be like too, and really thought about the commitment that this job would require for them. That said, I think that one person stood out for me, and because of the commitment and the research that she did, I think the long-term commitment that Ellen has had for our district makes her my top candidate, and that's who I'd support for John's position.
Any other board member discussion? Please don't be bashful. We hate this part of the process.
I too wanted to thank everybody. What I came away with is that there were some, everybody had at least one great idea that I'm afraid we're going to now have to pursue. So I wanted to thank all six of you for that. Kent, your concept of that information in the community builds that trust, I appreciated that. Mr. Shapiro, Mrs. Shapiro, excuse me, your sense in continued mentioning of parent involvement and parents at home rings true with me. Mr. Lathrop, your comments about children learning at a different rate, and that's also an achievement gap that we need to look at. And if you don't bridge it, then some people are failing and some people are succeeding. Ellen, your concept of how to deal with the sometimes different opinions on the board, and if everybody were to focus on the goal, rang very true with me. And I'm sorry, I'm going to not say this name correctly. Shrade.
You made it too difficult.
Sorry. I like the sense of the uncommon sense, and that was very nice. And your sense that the board's got an obligation to be the eyes, extra set of eyes on a contract. And Mr. Singwald, the concept of not just handing out a piece of paper to the special ed parents, but to take them through the process. So with that said, and my sense that everybody's contributed to this, I'd like to second the nomination for Ellen.
What's that? Oh, we haven't said
this. I would like to second. I'm sorry. I would like to second the support.
I appreciate the six candidates coming this evening, you didn't make our job very easy. All six were very qualified. All six brought together good ideas. I've gotten to see Catherine hard at work at Pacheco, and I always appreciate that. Every time I'm there, she's taking pictures of something. I'm sorry, Ms. Sheffer. Oh, sorry. Thank you.
This is Ross.
Sorry.
I'm not prepared to go through it person by person. My fellow board members are just better people than I am. But I thank you all really very much for coming. And what wasn't mentioned but is very obvious to us and would be obvious to anyone who watches this on television is the painful process of the open interview. I'm heartened that people care enough to come and be willing to submit to that kind of an interview process. And I'm glad that I don't have to do it. So I think that three of you I have worked with in other capacities in the district, and I have high regard and respect for those of you that I know, and I also have high regard and respect for the other candidates who came forward tonight and brought their best thoughts and ideas as to how a good board can work. I think what happened tonight is important, and also what preceded it, and I too am supporting Ellen Sheffer in part because she's come to board meetings. She has contacted us and contacted the administration. She's been information gathering. She really seems to know how this district works, has a good basic understanding of basic aid and funding. And she's someone that I believe that this board could work well with. And so I also will support Ellen Sheffer for John Sabatafor's seat.
Thank you. Thank you, all of you, for participating in this process and for providing us with the names of references, because I found that would be particularly important tonight. Knowing that we would not be able to interact with you, and that's very frustrating to sit here and hear you speak and answer the questions that we've put before you, but to not know more about you personally. So I did contact references for each of you, and some of the people actually called me back. Unfortunately, we had a very short turnaround since we just got this information on Friday, but I was able to hear from some of your references, and it was very helpful for me to understand some of the strengths you bring to your workplace or to your volunteer organizations. And I would just like to comment on everybody a little bit and then tell you about my where I've arrived. I would like to thank Mrs. Shapiro for bringing the perspective of a parent who has contributed a great deal to her school and to her school community, and bringing, of course, our awareness, which we have, about Pacheco, but also to just to reinforce the importance of that and in the role of closing the achievement gap, and very much appreciate that. And Mr. Lathrop, very much appreciate the background that you come from in terms of finance, and I love some of the comments that you made, the supporting the property values as being one of the things we can do to try to make sure we hold on to the money that we get as a basic aid district. I thought that was very practical and useful advice, and I thank you for suggesting that, and I second that idea. And Mr. Singewalt, his references particularly stand out. He's in the planning department, known as one of the best and brightest, and a brilliant young advocate, and an amazing, mature, bright, if I can read my own handwriting, reasonable and and something very else very flattering, I'm sure. I appreciate personally your passion that I could hear in your voice tonight as you talked about special needs of our and closing the achievement gap regarding that. And I'm sure we can all take that to heart. And thank you for bringing that to our attention. And Mr. Schrag, also lots of notes here from you about you and your funding priorities, the ease with which you talk to us, not seeing you at the moment, but oh, there you are, your very easy manner and the confidence that you inspire with that is wonderful. And I appreciated your SWOT acronym. I'll use that. The analysis, strengths, weaknesses, opportunities, and threat. That was very, very helpful. And I did also hear back from references that you gave us that have worked with you on volunteer positions. And Dr. Taylor comes extremely highly recommended by one of our employees at the County Office of Education. Gave some wonderful references for him as someone who can take both sides of an issue, can look at something from two sides and still stay in the middle and come up with a reasonable, intelligent recommendation. So I was overwhelmed with Mr. Taylor's qualifications before even having met him, and then it was reinforced by your performance tonight. So, and Ellen comes with such a wonderful background of actual involvement in the school for years and such a reasonable, thoughtful person, engaged in the community, well-respected and well-liked. And so I would have to say that I would have to clone the two of them and make them into the perfect board member. So I will not make a recommendation as which of the two, but I will cooperate with the rest of the board's wishes, and that's all I have to say. Thank you.
Well, it's all I could do to restrain myself for all this time, but that's what you have to do when you're the chair. I had the same tie that Catherine had, and I think one of the things I'm grateful for, besides the willingness that fine members of the public and our district are willing to come forward and volunteer for the board, is that I had an opportunity to get to know Kent Taylor a little better because we see him in such a limited role, and it turns out he's an amazing guy. Very impressed. And then my other tie was Ellen. In the interest of full disclosure, Ellen and I go back to C.L. Smith and site council and management site council, PQRs, I mean, some things that they don't even do anymore, I don't think. And she's had a consistent pattern of being involved at some level at whatever school her children are enrolled in. And then in a lot of cases at schools that her children have already finished and can't and she still is volunteering time in these things. She's served on the budget committees of superintendents and too many other things too numerous to mention. And what tipped the tie for me, besides being able to read the handwriting on the wall, is the involvement. Ellen is bilingual. She has been involved in the CLAD and BCLAD program at Cal Poly. Yes, the achievement gap represents difficulties among numerous students in trying to meet the unrealistic expectations of proficiency for all and some of these other things, but a large part of the challenges facing this district revolves around EL students, and I believe Ellen will bring an insight into that particular issue that, frankly, is not absent from the board, but we don't have the same perspective as somebody who has both been involved in the teaching program for teachers to be certificated so that they can respond to the needs of EL students more effectively, but somebody who is bilingual. And from early years, Ellen and her husband, Michael, and their children have traveled to Mexico and to Central America
I remember their gathering clothing 1 year to take down on their summer trip, and what their children derived from those experiences, I think, were just remarkable. And so that's what tipped the scale for me, and it was a difficult one. So I'm going to support Ellen as well. And with that, any other comments by board members? Someone like to make a motion?
I move Ellen Sheffer to take the fill the board, the vacant board position in area number one.
And if it's appropriate this time, I'd like to second that nomination.
All right. Any further discussion by board members?
Sorry. Passes 6-0. Congratulations to Ellen, and thank you all for your willingness to serve. Oh, we'll do that right now. Okay, hey, that's kind of nice. Of the United States and the State of California.
That I will bear true faith and allegiance to the Constitution of the United States and the Constitution of the State of California.
That I take this obligation freely without any mental reservation or purpose of evasion.
That I take this obligation freely without any mental reservation or purpose of evasion.
And that I will well and faithfully discharge the duties upon which I am about to enter.
And that I will well and faithfully discharge the duties upon which I am about to enter.
Thank you. Congratulations. Welcome to the board. Thank you.